verses 1 to 17 in Matthew chapter 1. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abram was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers, and Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Ram, and Ram the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab the father of Nashon, and Nashon the father of Salmon, and Salmon the father of Boaz by Rahab, and Boaz the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David the king. And David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah, and Solomon the father of Rehoboam, and Rehoboam the father of Abijah, and Abijah the father of Asaph, and Asaph the father of Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat the father of Joram, and Joram the father of Uzziah, and Uzziah the father of Jotham, and Jotham the father of Ahaz, and Ahaz the father of Hezekiah, and Hezekiah the father of Manasseh, and Manasseh the father of Amos, and Amos the father of Josiah, and Josiah the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the deportation to Babylon. And after the deportation to Babylon, Jeconiah was father of Shealtiel, and Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel, and Zerubbabel the father of Abiud, and Abiud the father of Eliakim, and Eliakim the father of Azor, and Azor the father of Zadok, and Zadok the father of Achim, and Achim the father of Eliud, and Eliud the father of Eleazar, and Eleazar the father of Matthan, and Matthan the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who is called Christ. So all the generations from Abraham to David were 14 generations, and from David to the deportation to Babylon, 14 generations, and from the deportation to Babylon to the Christ, 14 generations. May God bless us and cause us to give understanding of this amazing genealogy. Thank you.
I was at a preaching conference, and a guy was introducing the next speaker who happened to be from England. And the person who was introducing him was an American, and he was complaining about the fact that the British have an unfair advantage when it comes to preaching. Their beautiful accents make it possible for them to come up and say whatever they want, and us Americans are going to listen because we love the accent so much. He said, they could get up here and read their grocery list, and we would be blessed. And so this preacher gets up, and this would be funnier if I could do a British accent, and he starts going, a gallon of milk, a dozen eggs, a loaf of bread, and his British accent, and of course, we were all blessed by him doing that. Well, I think the British accent is beautiful. I think even more beautiful is an Australian accent. And by God's amazing providence, we had an Aussie here today who could come and read this particular passage of Scripture, which isn't necessarily the most exciting passage in the Bible. You don't often see these verses from Matthew chapter 1 on Christmas cards that people send out, and we don't usually sing them in our Christmas carols. It's not exactly the most dynamic, interesting, thought-provoking passage that we could choose. If you're going to write a book, put a lot of time into it, and obviously Matthew put a lot of time into his gospel. We might wonder if why he didn't put a little more thought into his introduction and make it just a little bit more exciting. The American Book Review came out with the 100 best lines from literature. I'm going to read a few of them to you, see if you recognize them. This was number 64 on their list. In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my mind ever since. What book is that from? You're all going to groan. The Great Gatsby. Come on. You guys read that in high school. Okay, you're going to get this one. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Tale of Two Cities. Good. All right. This is, you'll recognize the quote. See if you can get the book. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Anna Karenina. And finally, Call Me Ishmael. Moby Dick. All right, those kind of lines have intrigue. They have mystery. They draw you in and you wonder what is going to happen. Matthew doesn't have any mystery in his opening line. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. He tells you exactly who he is going to talk about, and he tells you the most important thing about his history that you need to know as he tells this story. He is the son of David and the son of Abraham. And then he gives a whole long list of names, but the two names besides Jesus that are really important on that list are Abraham and David. Abraham is the father of the Jewish people. God promised Abraham that through his offspring, through his descendants, all the nations of the world would be blessed. Matthew is making the point that Jesus is that descendant through whom all the nations are going to be blessed. David, a little bit further down the line, God promised to him that one of his descendants would sit on his throne forever. Jesus is that descendant who is going to sit on the throne of David forever. And so Matthew is making the point that Jesus is that son, that descendant that everyone has been waiting for. David's name, interestingly, is the 14th name on this list. In the Hebrew language, they assign a numerical value to every letter. And so if you take the consonants in David's name, and add them up, you're going to get a total of 14. That's significant because in the end, Matthew tells us in verse 17, all the generations from Abraham to David were 14 generations. And from David to the deportation to Babylon, 14 generations. And from the deportation to Babylon to the Christ, 14 generations. He breaks it down into these three sections of 14, and it's all so clean and neat and obvious that all of history points straight to Jesus Christ. History, just put a space in the word, add an extra S, is his story. And Matthew is organizing his book in such a way to say that the goal of all of history is Jesus Christ. If you were to go and see a fireworks display, you would sit there and you would see different fireworks, and some of them would stand out a little bit more than others. Some of them you would ooh and ah just a little bit louder. But everyone knows that at the end of the display, that's when they're going to save the biggest and the loudest fireworks, and that's when they're going to send the most off at the same time. And so everyone is waiting, as much as they're enjoying the display, they're waiting for the finale, when it's going to be the brightest and the loudest and the most beautiful. This list of names is a lot like a fireworks display. You see different ones that kind of stand out, names that you recognize, some that you don't, but you know that the goal of this list is that last name in verse 16 when he says, Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who is called Christ. That's the goal of this list, and the point Matthew is making is Jesus is the goal of history. All of history is pointing to Jesus Christ. But this list isn't quite like watching a fireworks display. It's not quite as interesting or captivating. It doesn't keep our attention as well as fireworks might. And it's not necessarily the kind of passage that when we're reading through, we would stop and we would meditate. When we were going through the book of Genesis, the first 12 chapters, when we got to Genesis chapter 5, it's a genealogy, and I had something really important that I just couldn't be here that week, so we had to have Philip, our pastoral intern, preach on that particular passage. Well, when we were talking about when we were going to, when he was going to preach this December, and I said, you know, here's the passages, he said, oh, that's right, I have a wedding to do in Alabama this weekend, so he's not here to preach this, so he's left me to do it. And so I'm trying to find a way to do this for you. And I think, you know, it's like a history lesson. And if you don't enjoy history, then it's difficult. But if you do enjoy history, and if you know a little bit about history, you start to read these names and you see the history start coming out. It's really an entire history of the Jewish nation, from the father of them, Abraham, to David, their greatest king, then to the deportation to Babylon. Four different times he mentions this phrase, the deportation to Babylon, starting in verse 11, then in verse 12, then in verse 17, two more times. Clearly, that is an important event in the history of Israel. King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon came to Jerusalem, destroyed the city, took the majority of the people, and led them into exile in Babylon. This was 586 years before the time of Christ. They were in exile for about 70 years until King Cyrus made a decree, and some of them returned to Israel. You may recognize the name Zerubbabel in this list. They came back with him and with Ezra, and they rebuilt the temple, but the glory of the Lord never returned to the temple. And a lot of the people never returned to Israel. So as he's writing this list, you're thinking about the exile, and you're thinking about, well, they sort of came back, but ultimately they didn't come back, and they're still waiting for someone to come and deliver them. Some of them are thinking about the fact that right now they are under Roman oppression. And so it gets to this end of this list, and it gets to the name Jesus, which is also at a very interesting place in this list. We said that there are three groups of 14 names. Well, if you divide each group in half, you get six groups of seven names. That means if he was going to add another group of names, you would have the seventh group of seven names. Did you guys get that? Seven groups of seven names. And the first name that's going to be on that list of names is Jesus. The point that he's making is finally there is someone who has come to free them from exile. In verse 21, it says, "She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." They are not so much oppressed and slaves of Pharaoh or of Nebuchadnezzar. They don't wear physical chains on their wrists, but they are slaves to a master that is much more cruel and much more demanding. They're slaves to sin, as are all of us. And we need someone to come, someone in this line who will come and rescue us from that sin. And Jesus Christ is that one, sent from God to finally free us from exile by saving us from our sin. So as he continues the story of Jesus, after this long list of names, he is going to tell the story of the one who was sent from God to finally free his people from slavery by saving them from their sin. He is the Messiah, or the Christ. And you imagine as he gets to the end of this list, the people are going to start celebrating and rejoicing about the fact that the Messiah has finally come. And they're going to have these questions like, where was he born? Was it in a palace? Who were his parents? Were they a king and were they a queen? How did it happen? And Matthew's going to have to say, well, it's not exactly the way that you would think it was going to happen. You see, Jesus' parents weren't exactly married at the time that his mother became pregnant. And it's not what you think, but you know how people talk and you know how word spreads, and they're going to say, there's no way that we could trust someone who came from such questionable circumstances. There's no way that God would send his son, send the Messiah in a way that seems just a little bit shady, a little bit questionable. And Matthew's going to go on and explain how that there's no way that they could ask questions or accuse Joseph or Mary of anything. But before he does that, he sets them up to expect something strange by hinting at the strange family stories in the history of Israel. All of us have kind of strange family stories, parts of our history that maybe a little bit embarrassing. This is mine. This is published in my hometown newspaper when I was in third grade. We had to write an essay about our favorite older American. And so I came and I wrote this. It says, about my grandma. My grandma is very nice. Every time I go down there, she gives me something. She has 13 kids. She lives on a farm, so it's lots of fun to go down there. My grandma always has lots of food when we go down there. She is 72 years old. She is funny because once she took her bra off to mark a fishing spot. Now, I want you to know, my grandma was a wonderful, virtuous woman who would also love the fact that her grandson right now is using this story as a sermon illustration. We've circulated this copy of this article throughout our family, but it's a very strange family story. And if you think that's strange, I'm going to tell you some of the stories in the history of Israel. Stories that you would think Matthew would want to hide, but instead of hiding them, he actually highlights them. He brings them out by including the names of women in his genealogy. That was completely unnecessary. In his time, genealogies would just include men's names. But Matthew includes all of the men's names, but he also adds the names of women. You can see them. Two of them are in one's in verse 3, Tamar. And then in verse 5, we read about Rahab and Ruth. And then in verse 6, we read about the wife of Uriah. Those are the first four women's names in this list, and they all have something in common. Tamar, she was the daughter-in-law of Judah. She was married to Judah's oldest son. But her husband died, and they didn't have any children, so their custom was that the next son would marry her so that she would have children. Well, he did. He didn't give her children, so he died as well. And so Judah said, Wait until my third son grows up, and then I will give him to you, and he will give you children. Tamar knew that he was not going to follow through on that promise. One day she heard that he was going to be traveling down a certain road, so she went there. She dressed as a prostitute. When he came, he saw her, and he hired her, but he didn't have anything to pay her. So she said, well, just give me some of your personal effects, and then when you send the payment, I'll give you these things back. But when he sent someone to pay her, she wasn't there anymore. They couldn't find her. And then a few months later, he got the news that Tamar was pregnant by immorality. He said, well, we're going to have to bring her out, and we're going to have her burned. And so they bring her out, and she is holding his staff and his other things. And suddenly he realizes that he's the one who got her pregnant. That is a strange story. And that's a story in the Bible. And that is a story in the history of Jesus Christ. That is part of his family tree. The next woman that's mentioned is Rahab. Rahab didn't pretend to be a prostitute. She was a professional career prostitute. In the city of Jericho, Joshua sent two spies to check out the city, and they show up at her door. They go in the middle of the night, and she protects them, and then they come out, and then when the city is destroyed, Rahab is saved, and she ends up marrying one of the Hebrew people, and she ends up in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, a prostitute. The next person is Ruth. Now, she wasn't a prostitute. She was a foreigner, a Moabite, and her husband had died, and she came to Israel, and she meets an older, wealthy man named Boaz, and he's attracted to her. One night, she goes down. It's dark. He's had a lot to drink, and she lays down next to him. Nothing happened. She went away that night, and the next day he came and he proposed to her. But you know how people talk, and they hear the story and they say, you know, that was just a little bit strange that it happened that way. That's in the history of Jesus Christ. Now, we can't blame Ruth for anything she did. She was completely moral and upright. And you think, well, you know, things are getting better. The story at least isn't getting it's getting less weird and less sad. And then you get to David, this great king of Israel. And you learn that he had his son, in verse 6, by the wife of Uriah. Matthew didn't need to mention that. All he had to say was that Solomon was the son of David. But by mentioning the fact that he was born by the wife of Uriah, he's reminding everyone that David's relationship with Solomon's mother started through adultery. And Uriah is the man that she was married to that he had murdered. This is a low point in the history of Israel, one of the saddest stories in the entire scripture. And you would think Matthew would just skip over that. He didn't have to mention it. But he adds it in there as a reminder to all of us that this long road that goes straight to Christ takes a lot of strange turns along the way. The long road that goes straight to Christ takes a lot of strange turns along the way. And you're going to get a really strange turn when he gets to the end and talks about Jesus, talks about Mary, the mother of Jesus, who became pregnant when the Holy Spirit came upon her. And you think, wow, what a strange story. And then you remember, oh yeah, that's how God has worked throughout history, doing things that we wouldn't expect the way that we would never plan them. Especially, not only when it comes to Jesus' birth, but when it comes to Jesus' death. Jesus, the Messiah, sent to redeem his people, does not rescue them through violence and power, but through weakness and violence done to him by hanging him on the cross. And as he's buried, the disciples think, this is not the way that we planned it. This is not what we expected to happen. But Matthew wants you to be prepared that sometimes, often, this road that leads straight to Christ takes some very, very strange turns. Maybe this morning you are on a spiritual journey. And you're wondering what is true, if Jesus Christ really is the Son of God. And as you look back on the path that you've taken on this journey, you may think it didn't exactly go the way that I expected it to go. It's not as clear as I would like it to be. I want to remind you this morning that the road that leads straight to Christ, it takes some very strange turns. Maybe you've come to Christ, you've put your faith in him, and you look back at the way that God used to bring you to his son. And you can now see as you look back that the different things that had happened in your life were the things that God used that you didn't expect, but in the end, he used them to bring you to his son, Jesus Christ. Maybe you're going through something right now that you don't understand. Life isn't turning out the way that you expect it to turn out, and you're wondering what's going on, I want to remind you that God can use anything, any situation, and turn it to bring you to his Son, Jesus. Jesus is the goal of history. He's the point of history. He's come to save us from our sin and to free us from exile. And this long road that leads straight to Jesus Christ takes some very strange turns. A few years ago, it was December, and I had started dating this girl, and we went on a date, and it had taken a while to get there for us personally, and also both of us were a few years past the national average age for marriage, and so we were both kind of wondering, you know, what's going on, what is God doing in our lives, and we were on this date at Applebee's, and there were only a few shopping days left before Christmas. She was kind of stressed out, and so I took out a napkin. I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's write down a list of the names of all the people that you need to buy gifts for. So we wrote down as many names of her family members as we could think of, and then I said, okay, let's see if we can think of any gifts, and I think we wrote down a few gifts next to those names. I don't remember any of the gifts that we wrote down on that napkin. In fact, I don't remember any gifts that I received that year for Christmas, but I do remember that date, and I do remember that time that we spent together relating to each other, having that conversation, and thinking together about the Christmas gifts that she was going to buy. I had no idea that the names that I wrote on that napkin would end up being the genealogy of our son. So that was 5 years ago, and that was a date that I had with Tanya. It took a long time to get to that point. And that road that we traveled to get there took a lot of strange turns. But in the end, we connected with each other. And that's really what Christmas is about, is having a relationship with people, not necessarily dating them and getting married, but connecting with people. And that's what God ultimately is interested in. He's interested in connecting people with his Son, Jesus Christ. So wherever you are on your journey, on that long road to Jesus Christ, know that you may take some very strange turns. But in the end, the journey ends in Jesus Christ.